Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. And here is your host, Ryan Mack.
Welcome to the Payments Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Mack. Now, we certainly talk a lot about the complex nature of the U.S. payments ecosystem, and for good reason. But on this episode, we want to up the ante and talk about the complications of cross-border payments. Now, before you take off running for the hills, keep in mind that there has been a lot done to ease the pain of cross-border payments, but there is still more work that can be done. So, the best way to understand the issues with cross-border payments is to dive right in. On this episode, I'm joined by Celia Tamez, who is the CSO at XE Corporation, and Steve Murphy, who is the Director of the Commercial and Enterprise Payments Advisory Service at Mercator Advisor Group. So there's certainly a lot of data and insight to unpack on this episode, so without any further delays, let's start the show.
So Cecilia and Steve, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode, where we're going to be taking a deep dive into international commerce and really particularly around cross-border payments here. And now, Steve, I would like to get your take from Mercator Advisor Group here, because cross-border payments is certainly a very complex subject here. Maybe you could provide us with a little bit of a market overview and maybe kind of a little 101 explanation of cross-border payments.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much of a 101 there'll be, but there's probably no other area with more payments technology focus over the past several years than in the cross-border space, because all sorts of effort is being exerted on improving the experience and the cost for both individuals and businesses. And this innovation activity is being fueled by the need to progress from the kind of traditional systems and correspondent banking models into a more modern, faster, and kind of transparent experience. Both the G20 and kind of through the BIS, the Bank of International Settlements, they've been publishing their thoughts on this for a couple of years now, and we've seen lots of innovative fintechs as well as banks. Well, you can consider SWIFT as banks since it's a bank-owned cooperative, have made strides in improving cross-border payments. Now, the thing is that most people don't realize the volume of cross-border payments or the flows that occur on a daily basis, but it's very substantial. These flows include payments for goods and services between businesses and between consumers and businesses, as well as funds transfers between individuals themselves. There's also the immense value of funds transfers for corporate liquidity management, payments to satisfy loans, including syndicated loans and other types of loans, as well as central bank reserve requirements as necessary. So lots of funds are moving around. And this kind of all adds up to something like an estimated $150 trillion annually. So I'll leave it there and we can start our discussion.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that, Steve. Really do appreciate it. Now, Cecile, I'd like to get you involved in the conversation here. You know, kind of listening to Steve unpack all of that, it certainly sounds like, you know, this huge market that's here. But I'd love to get from your perspective of why in particular is cross-border payments so difficult?
Well, the answer to that is it's simple and it's complicated. The simple answer is legacy cross-border payments are slow, they're clunky, they lack transparency and inclusion in the form of where funds are sent to and payment channels. But everybody knows this. It's like having a dust in your eye. You know it hurts, but you don't know exactly why. The fundamental problem with cross-border payments is that the value chain is disjointed. Nobody owns the experience end to end, and that leads to low transparency and low predictability of time and cost. That's like, I'm sending a payment, I don't exactly know when it's going to arrive on the other side, and sometimes I don't know if the full amount is going to arrive to my beneficiary. So most people in the industry are familiar with SWIFT. It's this Belgian cooperative, and it enables payments between banks worldwide through this messaging network. But it's just that, it's a messaging network. So essentially it's an exchange of data between two banks and it doesn't actually provide the settlement. So when a financial institution connects to SWIFT, that doesn't automatically connect them to every bank in the world that's also connected to SWIFT. They still need to connect to their own correspondent network, and that could translate to thousands of contracts, relationships, integrations, And it takes a really long time. It took us more than 30 years and an army of people to build our dandelion network. So to minimize this effort, a lot of banks connect to intermediary banks, and those intermediary banks work like hubs to connect those missing connections between banks. But that translates to the fact that a cross-border payment could touch as many as 5 banks between the originating bank and the destination bank, and that results in these payments that are slow and clunky. They can take days to arrive, especially if they're going to emerging markets. And if the payment goes wrong, you don't know where that payment sits. You have to initiate a trace and it can be a real mess. The other thing is that these legacy banking rails, they lack diversity in payout channels. If you need to send cash to your grandmother in Mexico, SWIFT isn't going to be able to allow you to do that. So it really lacks financial inclusion. So banks and other financial institutions really struggle to be able to drive that inclusivity for their customers. Ultimately, the best way to overcome these hurdles is for financial institutions to use polyfunctional cross-border payment rails like our Dandelion network in order to solve those issues.
So, Cecilia, I just have a question. When you talk about, and this is more on the B2B side, when you talk about most high-value cross-border transactions, they're kind of initiated via the bank and then through RTGS or, you know, some other a wire transfer system. And they're going to use SWIFT messaging. How does your Dandelion system interact with the, you know, SWIFT and these payment rails?
So essentially the way Dandelion works is it is connected to SWIFT. So if there are certain transactions that will go through SWIFT, but the majority, we've essentially created an alternate channel outside of SWIFT, which is essentially we have a direct connection to a local bank and we have the direct connection to the local banks on both sides of the transaction. So if a customer sends funds to us locally, our local bank account in the destination location will deliver the funds to the correspondent bank and it can be done in real time. But there are
things
SWIFT is connected. So essentially the polyfunctional is where we're able to connect a multitude of networks, a network of networks, if you will.
Got it. Thanks.
You know, if we can, let's stay with that term there, because I think it's a really interesting one, because you kind of are saying, hey, Dandelion is this polyfunctional cross-border payment rail here, right? And that's certainly a bit of a mouthful. So I'd like to dive into that just a little bit further. So maybe, Cecilia, you can kind of break down, A, what does that mean when we say polyfunctional cross-border payment rail? And how does that help with the issues that both you and Steve were kind of talking about as it relates to cross-border payments?
Well, polyfunctional cross-border payments rails, it's a bit of a mouthful, but essentially it's payment rails that can execute end-to-end cross-border payments, and it enables interoperability between a variety of payout channels. So it can deliver to a bank account or a cash payout or a wallet. In our case, our Dandelion network sends payments to 171 countries and territories, and those payments can be delivered to either a bank account, but beyond that, we can deliver to over 500,000 cash pickup locations or even send money to a mobile wallet in India, for example. Why is that important? Mostly because legacy payment rails focus on bank deposits, and that's fine for developed economies. But today, global economies are increasingly interdependent, and that's creating this growing need for consumers and businesses to send cross-border payments in real time to and from emerging markets. And alternative channels are really key to making that work. So when we think about emerging markets, we've got, you know, according to the UN, there are more than 1.7 billion adults that are excluded from formal financial systems. These are mostly people in developing countries, and not having access impedes their ability to earn a living or to protect themselves in times of crisis. If we think about people fleeing Ukraine and not having access to their local bank, for example, so they go to another country and they're underbanked or unbanked. But this issue isn't just limited to individuals. There's also more than 200 million small and medium-sized enterprises in emerging markets that lack access to these financial systems. And alternative payments play a really important part in their financial inclusion because it essentially functions like a bridge to connect them to financial systems, the digital economy. Now, some institutions might think, well, that's an issue in developing economies. That's not my problem. But the reality is that this financial exclusion hurts everyone because it's a two-way street. It's not just consumers and businesses who are disconnected from financial institutions, but consumers and businesses in developed countries are also prevented from accessing opportunities in these developing markets. So that could include potential customers. That could include suppliers. It could include labor resources that they're excluded from. So financial exclusion really severs this connection to financial opportunity for everyone. And fintechs and financial institutions know this. They're aware that this gap exists, and they know it's an immense opportunity because emerging markets are growing so quickly. And they're trying to expand to these services, but the problem is that legacy cross-border payment rails are just not built to deliver on that financial inclusion because it's alternative channels. So enabling that interoperability between legacy and alternative payment channels, polyfunctional cross-border payment rails are uniquely positioned to enable this financial inclusion and drive those opportunities for growth, both in developed and developing economies.
So, you had mentioned kind of the 1.7 billion adults and a couple hundred million small businesses that, you know, don't necessarily have access to banking relationships. So is there an example, or can you give an example or two of what types of alternative channels are being enabled for these excluded individuals and businesses?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we think about Africa or Latin America, they essentially have been underbanked for a really long time, and a large portion of the population doesn't have a bank account. So if somebody wants to send money to Mexico and they want to send cash to their grandmother, for example, that would be an alternative channel. Being able to go to your bank, for example, and paying your bank, initiating that payment from a digital channel, but then having that payment delivered to a cash pickup location or a mobile wallet is really key to being able to make those connections.
I see. So the mobile wallet, you know, would sound like a bank account, but it's not really, right? It's delivered in a cash basis through a mobile phone company, right?
Yeah, India is a really wonderful example of a country that's put in a lot of investment to improve the financial inclusion, to improve how people are connected to financial systems. So they've created this UPI product that allows telcos to carry these limited licenses, for example, that are essentially functioning like a bank light. And people can hold funds in these wallets through their telcos, through their mobile phone, because most people in India have a mobile phone. They may not have a bank account, but they'll definitely have a mobile phone. So it really closes this gap to enable people to participate in the digital economy.
All right. Got it. Thanks.
Yeah. And I think that's a great place to kind of segue into this, where we really kind of want to talk about that customer experience. You know, I think that the payments industry certainly discusses a lot and pays a lot of attention to the experience of consumers, and business users, I think, often take a look at that experience and say, well, why not here on the business side? Why can't I get that same experience? So Cecilia, I'd love to get from your perspective at Euronet Worldwide, then how does the cross-border payments industry really achieve that goal that they're looking for?
Well, when you think about it, even though consumers and businesses may have very different use cases in their cross-border payments, at the end of the day, they value the same things. They want their cross-border payments to have speed, transparency, and choice. Now, real-time payments, or RTPs, they're incredibly important to business because the longer their money is floating in transit, the less money they have in the bank or to do other things with it. So to deliver on that promise, the customer experience is only as good as the payment rails it sits on. It may have a beautiful UI, but if the payment takes days to arrive or the full amount doesn't arrive to the beneficiary, the experience is going to be poor. And here's the challenge. Real-time payments, they're realized in domestic payment schemes across more than 55 countries, but there's very few providers that support real-time cross-border payments. The reason being is that there's no governing body to standardize RTP schemes globally. So at Dandelion, we've placed a lot of focus on interconnecting all of these domestic schemes to build a virtual cross-border RTP scheme, if you will. And through that, we enable real-time cross-border payments across 76 countries. That's more than formal RTP schemes exist because of our direct connection to local banks around the world, and that number is growing really quickly. So the thing is that when it comes to businesses, it's not just real-time payments, but it's also transparency. They need to be able to communicate to suppliers and to customers about the status of their payments. And if the payment connections are more direct and the funds arrive instantly, then there's going to be fewer questions like, where's my money? And so that basically reduces time. It reduces effort because you don't have to have extra staff who are dedicated to searching for payments or trying to track payments gone wrong in finance departments. And then the last thing is also that emerging markets, as I said, are really important to businesses because it enables them to grow and it drives opportunity for them. And it's important to have these polyfunctional cross-border payments rails available to them so that they can connect to different people around the world and get access to that labor around the world or get access to those suppliers that they otherwise wouldn't have access to. When we built Dandelion, we built it for ourselves because we knew how important it was. We knew it was a massive opportunity for ourselves. So we built it for ourselves. So our customers, consumers and businesses could send payments to every corner of the globe without any limitations around, you know, the payout channel or the destination. But along the journey, we realized, you know what, it shouldn't just be our customers alone. We wanted everyone to have access to this. So we are now enabling other financial institutions and fintechs to deliver that same value to their customers too. Any financial institution and fintech can connect payments to the world through Dandelion, and all they need is a single contract, one easy API integration, and that helps their customers, both consumers and businesses.
Okay, so Cecilia, what you've got all of these different use cases that your system is capable of sort of facilitating. And if you think about the different experiences, you know, in a remittance versus maybe a consumer wants to pay a business cross-border, you know, to pay for goods and services or an invoice or business to business or even larger value. How does this solution normalize all of these experiences? Is that something that you've built or is that something you rely upon the banks to build the interface or, you know, how does that all work?
Well, so at the end of the day, everybody has to play a part in order to achieve cross-border payments. It's not just a technology that's an issue. There's also regulatory and compliance issues as well. So where our rails play a part is in driving that simplicity to connect to all the banks in the world and making sure that we are adhering to regulation and we're licensed to operate in all of these countries. Now, when we build a relationship with a correspondent bank, part of that relationship is to discuss and negotiate what kind of payments are going to be received and to connect to their own compliance layer to ensure that we are adhering to the requirements of, you know, remittance payments, consumer payments, business payments. There's a lot of complexity that sits there. But when it comes to the role of the financial institution or the fintech that connects into us for their own customers, they also have to play a role as well from a licensing perspective and from onboarding perspective. They need to still perform the know your customer and all of the things that are specific to either a consumer or a business. Ultimately, they have that relationship with their own customer and they pass the payment through Dandelion and we can deliver anywhere from C2C, B2B, C2B, and B2C.
Got it. All right. Thanks.
Yeah. And I mean, I think really through this conversation, you know, we're really kind of unpacking the fact that, you know, this is certainly a very complex issue of being able to send a payment from one country to the next where you have, you know, kind of your own domestic payment schemes and messaging that can happen within a particular country and how that differs then to another country that you may be sending the payment to. And then also those, as you brought up, Cecilia, kind of the compliance and regulatory aspect, and then also how the data is managed and controlled are certainly, you know, additional factors to consider about the complexity. But one of the things particularly interesting within the space that is kind of starting to come to light is the ISO 20022 message format. And we know that from a global standpoint, you know, organizations in countries are looking to adopt this messaging format here. But I'd like to kind of get from your perspective, how is it that this new format may kind of address some of these interoperability challenges now? And also, how can organizations kind of help better prepare themselves for future changes?
Well, it's complicated, but no, you're right. There are a lot of organizations that don't adhere to ISO 20022. And it's not because they don't want to. It's because there's complexity and there's technology and there's legacy and they have a lot of priorities on their plate. They're doing their best. They're trying, but it's hard. One of the key challenges to operating on a global level is that you need a platform that can switch between system protocols, a multitude of technologies, different business rules and compliance regulations, and it all has to happen in real time. So while the industry is moving to ISO 20022 for bank transactions, and Euronet, our parent company, does offer a product called RenConnect Go, which it's a digital payments overlay service to help banks in that transition. Even with ISO 20022, it still doesn't solve for that issue of alternative payment methods like cash and mobile wallets. So one of the benefits of polyfunctional cross-border payment rails like Dandelion is that we take that complexity out. We take out the complexity of having multiple coding languages and different technologies. All it takes is one single API connection, and you can plug into the world. And the other layer on top of that is that Dandelion has those global licenses. It's got the local boots on the ground all over the world to make sure that we're adhering to those local legal and compliance requirements. But our technology team is also constantly focused on creating the most flexible integration platform to ensure that we're not only accelerating the reach to our correspondent network, but also minimizing that effort for our customers to have to undertake that complexity so that they can connect to the world.
Yeah, more of an observation than a question, I would say. The kind of the genesis of ISO 20022 goes back about 20 years, but it really started taking off with the onset and the increasing use of RTP, which is about, I think, 60 different systems around the globe. And so as we talk to banks, we find out that, you know, they're trying to make the decision as to whether or not to implement an RTP on behalf of their customers, certainly in the U.S., you know, with TCH. And the upcoming FedNow, that's a big decision. And that decision sort of goes hand in hand with ISO 20022, because you've got other systems, including SWIFT and Fedwire and so forth, that are going to be switching over to that standard in the next couple of years. So it's interesting to know that you provide services that banks can utilize to help them get there, because a lot of them are trying to figure out how to modernize their payment systems. And I think a lot of them are starting with real-time payments.
Yeah, that's generally an issue. Banks are always having this question, right? Rip and replace, or is there another service that can help us? And that's where overlay services are really powerful. Instead of having to take out all of their legacy systems, some of which might have coding languages that are obsolete, instead they can offer something like the RenConnect Go, which essentially creates this middle layer that translates their old legacy systems to the new world and makes it a much easier transition.
Well, Cecilia, I gotta say, you might not want to use the words rip and replace here. You're gonna make all the audience run away from that, from some of the PTSD that they might have from the last time that certain organizations had to go through that. But I do think that we live in interesting times, and speed and trust are certainly becoming an even more paramount to financial institutions. So before we wrap things up, Cecilia, I'd love to get from you your thoughts on how then financial institutions can leverage a great cross-border payment service as a differentiator in the marketplace?
Well, in a world where you can send a text to any corner of the globe instantly, customers, especially young customers, have grown to expect that that is the norm, right? And they expect that their money transfers are going to be just as fast. So the thing that financial institutions like banks have today is that they already have an advantage. They, for the most part, already have an established account relationship. They have trust with their customer. What's missing is that they don't have the product that customers want. So when customers send a money transfer, they just don't understand why their money is kept floating for days at a time. And that results in their customers eroding trust in their financial institution, or increasingly they start to seek non-bank cross-border payment providers. Now, if FIs don't adapt, they risk losing that customer, especially as these fintechs continue to encroach on other bank services. So they sign up customers for money transfers, but now they're starting to build other services that are competing with banks. All financial institutions have to do is provide a better cross-border payment service that's fast, that's transparent, that offers reach that their customers need to geographic destinations and choice of payment channels, and they don't lose that customer. And even better, they get maybe bring the customers back that they've lost in the past. So Dandelion is a really easy way for FIs and fintechs to augment those services for themselves with relatively low effort, and it's an immense benefit to their customers.
So one last question, just following on that thought. Are you, you know, in terms of your interactions with banks now, are you seeing any sort of difference in the adoption rate or kind of the willingness to collaborate by financial institutions based on either the type of institution or the asset class size?
Yeah, you know, I think historically banks have gotten a really bad rap. They have really smart people. They are where they are because they're really good at what they do. The challenge for banks is that they have complexity. They have a lot of legacy systems and technology sometimes is a struggle. So I think a lot of forward-thinking banks in the last few years have realized that the fintechs are not the enemy. They're not the competition. We can all work together to build better services. And so there's been this immense push for better collaboration between banks and fintechs such as ourselves to be able to create those products that customers need and ultimately provide that better service for those customers that banks have.
Excellent. Well, I think we'll end things on that note there. So Cecilia, Steve, thank you so much for taking the time today for speaking to me about international commerce and cross-border payments. And I hope to have you both back on the podcast real soon.
Thank you for that.
Thanks.